Hi, patrons. It's me, David Chen. And I'm here with another episode of Dave on Dave, featuring me, David Chen, as well as media mogul, advisor to the stars, consultant to the titans of the media industry, David Cho. David, thanks for chatting with me as usual.
You sound so genteel, or like very kind in a way that I just haven't heard you. Yeah, it's cool.
I'm trying.
It's cool to see the growth.
But if you're just tuning in to Dave on Dave for the first time, which some people might be, we're getting new patrons every month. Dave on Dave is an ongoing series where I, David Chen, get advice, consoling, reflection, sympathy, empathy, you know, hanging out.
Talk about whatever's going on with Dave Chen.
Yeah, so it's an ongoing Patreon series. And again, thanks to all the patrons at patreon.com/DaveChen who make my work possible. So, David Cho, it's been a few weeks since the last time we've checked it. We had a bunch of episodes in May, I feel like. We had a bunch of Dave on Dave action in May, and been a little bit less so this month.
Oh.
But how have you been? You've been traveling around the world, right?
Yeah, I had to go abroad for a wedding. Went to Italy. It was nice.
Are you able to say who the wedding is for, or is that...
I mean, do you know who the wedding is for? Is it someone of note?
I don't know. You
tell
me.
Oh, no. Yeah. It was just a friend of mine. Another podcaster, actually.
Uh-huh. Are you going to say who it is, or?
Yeah, it's this guy, Jason Stewart. He goes by Them Jeans. He has a podcast called How Long Gone. Mm. And do you know what it is?
I don't. It sounds like vaguely familiar, but yeah, I don't know that much about it.
Yeah, I didn't think you. I was surprised if you had any recognition of it. But no, it's a nice little podcast. They do well. But it was a small wedding, 30 people, and it was just one of those things. Yeah. It was like, I mean, it felt like a large group trip. There was no extended family. It was just like, it was probably like 20 friends and then 10 family. And so, yeah, it was nice.
I think I personally prefer a smaller wedding, you know, in general.
Like, at our age, I mean, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, at this point, it's like, if you're going to have to travel, I don't want it to be massive. You know, I don't. Mm-hmm. That's just me.
You don't have to deal with all those people, basically.
Yeah, right? I don't love going to weddings anymore. Because it's just like, everyone's just like, there are a lot of adults who are like, or parents especially, who are like, this is the only time I can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And they just try to do it all. And I'm like, I make mistakes every day.
I don't know if we've talked about this, but I feel like weddings have, in general, ruined as many relationships as they have created, if that makes sense.
Wow, hot take. Tell me more.
Well, I just remember, like, when I got married to my wife, that there was a lot of, like, there's a lot of times where, like, in the lead up to a wedding and during weddings, like, emotions are heightened, right? And so, so what I mean by that is, like, if you slight someone on the day of their wedding, they'll remember that for the rest of their life. Versus if you slight someone like, you know, during weekly Sunday brunch. Do you know what I'm saying?
This actually happened to me, and I didn't realize I had slighted someone by not going to their wedding.
Right.
And
exactly.
You're really right. It's like, it ruined our relationship, which was extremely close. And I think I didn't understand what me going would have meant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it fucked it up, and me and that person no longer talk in a way that makes me sad.
That sucks. That sucks. And it's like, can't you see these weddings are tearing us apart? You know what I mean by that is, like, it doesn't this celebration of love should be the thing that shatters so many relationships. And, you know, that's one example. What you've described is one example of how it plays out. Like, other examples are like, stuff that actually happens at the wedding, you know, not even just like, did you go or not, but like, you went, but then you said the wrong thing, or you did the wrong thing, or you didn't give a gift, or you gave too many gifts, or, you know, like,
who's mad at too much gift?
Yeah, maybe it's like, hey, you gave too many gifts and you like upstaged the other people or whatever, you know, like,
I don't know.
Landmines everywhere is what I'm saying.
I think that's life, though. I mean, it's like, I don't think that person being offended by that, I didn't understand at the time, but I obviously get it a lot more now. And I'm just like, you know, I was younger and I didn't have any idea, but I think, I don't know. I mean, life is full of landmines. I don't think it's like, things are heightened at weddings for sure. But I would say I actually like the ceremony part of a wedding, especially when two people really love each other and their vows are so intimate and vulnerable. It's, you know, I've, I've been crying a lot at weddings, which I didn't used to do. I think post therapy. But no, it's, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say they break as many things as they create, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. it's just an unfortunate thing, but, no, it was really nice. It was a nice little, I was only there for a few days. It was like a 4-day, 5-day trip. But how are you?
You know, I'm doing fine. All things considered, you know, like can't complain, but, I think, when it comes to the business side of things, I would say I'm in a very strange place. You know, I think I'm in a very strange place.
Share about as much of that as you would like. And if you want to share none, then that's also okay.
I'll share two stories, the second of which has a few components to it.
Okay.
The first is that I am extremely happy with Decoding Reality and how Decoding Reality did. We recently covered The Ultimatum, Queer Love, The Ultimatum, and at decodingreality.tv, which is part of the Decoding TV network. And that podcast was done with Justin Jordan and Deja, who are two very talented hosts. And I had previously, they had previously kind of, let me restate. We had previously worked together to cover The Bachelor season, I think 27, 37, oh, you know, whatever it was.
So many Bachelor seasons.
And that podcast, I have told them, you know, was not a, like, I'm extremely happy with the podcast, like from a product perspective. Like, I'm very proud of that we put that out. But it didn't attract that many listeners, or it didn't attract as many listeners as I wanted it to. And then Joy and I covered Love is Blind on Decoding Reality, and that did very well. Like, I think 5,000 to 6,000 people tuned in for our reunion recap YouTube, and you know, that was nice. And then I was like, you know, I think these Netflix, like, I had this speculation that, like, with the Bachelor, like, people have been watching that show for decades now, right? Like, mm-hmm. and so their habits around watching The Bachelor are all ingrained, right? They're all like, they have their friends that they watch it with, they have their podcasts that they listen to, they have their YouTubes that they watch, you know, like, they've been doing it for many years,
honestly.
If they watch anything, that's right. Yeah. If they're even watching at all, which, you know, not very many people were this last Bachelor season. I think the reason why Joy and I were able to find some audience for our Love is Blind stuff is because there's just not that many people covering it, or there's not that many people covering it, and or not that many people covering it well. So I said, hey, why don't you guys, have you guys considered covering The Ultimatum? And they covered The Ultimatum, and I thought they did an amazing job. They provided a perspective that is, in general, not very out there, and it did better than our Love is Blind stuff. Which I
genuinely
thought,
don't even know what the show is that you're talking about. I'm just so out of the loop of reality.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's by the creators of Love is Blind.
Got it.
The Ultimatum is basically about you're in a long-term relationship and your significant other says, I'm giving you an ultimatum. You either get married to me or we split up. That's kind of the ultimatum.
Nice.
But before you do that, you have the chance to be a domestic partner with someone else who's also on the show.
Oh, also healthy.
So it's extremely sabotaging of any healthy relationships.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's also very popular. So, as of this morning, I think it was one of the top 10 shows on Netflix. So,
I'm happy for your podcasters. I'm sad for society. Sorry.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I was really,
sounds like a compliment sandwich is coming up. Or I guess like a good news, bad news situation.
Totally. I mean, I think it's just more like, and I talked about this in a little bit on the last Dave on Dave, but like the hardest part about trying to create anything in this, in the media industry,
Tell me more.
Is
everything.
Is like needing to trust your gut and like often not having any assurance that you are right or wrong, do you know? Or like it often takes a long time before you are proven correct or incorrect. So there is something that I was reading. I apologize if I'm repeating this anecdote. I think I might have already said this anecdote last time, but it obviously is still on my mind. But like, I was reading articles about the writer's strike, and something they said was, nobody ever calls you and tells you your career is over. Like, if you're a creator,
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, nobody ever calls you and says, hey, by the way, you're never going to make another movie again. You're never going to write another movie. No one ever says that in the industry. And why that's relevant is because, like, you don't know if you've lost it. No one is going to tell you, you've lost it, David. Like, it's over. You just kind of fumble around thinking you know what you're doing. And then you die. You know, like, that's kind of...
Oh, wow.
That's
and then you die. Okay. That escalated quickly, but sure.
Yeah, and so the idea that, like, I could still kind of from nothing with people that I know are talented, who I got to collaborate with me on this, could make a show into something that I was proud of and that did relatively well for what it was, made me feel, gave me a little bit of a little bit of encouragement, you know, a little bit maybe I do know what I'm doing here, you know.
Can I posit something? And I've felt this way before, so I'm being sympathetic, or I know the feeling of, you're like, am I even good at anything?
Yes, exactly. I've had that thought many, many times in the last, you know, year, let's say.
That's it. It's interesting. I mean, I think, so to the media of it all, as a, you know, I've been around the media block a bit. I think there's a few things about what you're saying. Like, I think one, it's like, you know, it's often qualitative and or subjective in how you decide to do something. But the even harder part, I think, oftentimes is it's even subjective as to whether or not you won.
Right? You know what I mean? It's like what it's is super, success? Like, you know?
Yeah, and I think that honestly is one part media. I think it's another part just life. You know, like I find that people that I work with and people that I know who, as you mentioned, I advise or I'm just like you know, working with in any capacity, I notice that, you know, their sense of happiness and success is often just completely in their control. You know, like, there are times when obviously things are bad or things are exceptionally good, but even when things are exceptionally good, like a certain mindset could make you feel like it's not good enough or like you failed or whatever. Like, I was talking to someone who I've been helping for almost a few years now, and we were going through it, and they're just sort of sharing about like how they felt like, well, this isn't working the way they wanted and that's not working the way they wanted. And then I kind of just like told them, I was like, okay, well, you know, and I think I've said this to you before, actually, you know, months ago, but like, I essentially like rattled off like all the things that had been accomplished in the last like X amount of time, right? And I was like, if you had told you then that you would have accomplished all these things, you would have been ecstatic. There was no part of your brain that thought even this amount of what you've accomplished would be doable. But what happened was, you know, at some point your ambitions just evolved and changed and got bigger and or just changed completely, and now what you thought you wanted isn't what you wanted. On top of that, like, you know, the thing that you thought would give you some sort of peace or some sort of sense of success didn't happen, or like didn't give you that sense of peace or success. That's not to say that you've done anything wrong or that you're like wrong for feeling those things or that you're those feelings are invalid, but more just like, I think it's just kind of like many things. I think the way you feel and especially whether or not you think you're successful in a time where it's truly impossible to tell. And also it's impossible to tell how successful other people are, which often guides what we ourselves think, how are we doing relative to other people oftentimes guides how we feel about ourselves. And it's become impossible to tell now because of the internet, like who's doing well and who's not. Everyone seems like they're fucking killing it oftentimes. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess I just say that to say, I hear you. I know the feeling of whatever. I think, you know, I mean, I think you're doing a good job. I think from the very subjective perspective of quality of content and output, I'm like, there's a lot of really, really good stuff you're doing. I think there's, thanks, you know, I like anything, I think there's always room to grow, but I think it's like, I think you've done a lot of things that I think you should be proud of over the last, you know, however long it's been.
Well, thanks, David. That's very kind. And we
trying to be kind. I'm just being. I'm being pretty. No, but I'm not a particularly like kind for this.
Forgiving, forgiving.
No, no.
Person.
I honestly, I'm not a very fake person. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If I didn't feel that way, I just wouldn't say anything.
Yeah. I believe you. Yeah.
You should. I've said so many mean things to you before.
Absolutely. Yeah.
yeah. Absolutely. But, I've been mean to you.
But yeah, I think. So that was nice, and that's just like, hey, that's a thing that I helped to put out into the world that wouldn't exist if it weren't for me, you know?
Yeah,
and I know
for sure.
Like thousands of people listened to that podcast and got something out of it, and it's because
how did most of the people find the content? Do you
TikTok?
Think?
We had some hit TikToks, dude.
Nice. Oh my gosh, some your favorite.
The
joy in your voice when you say hit TikTok really just.
It's I mean, dude, freaking like making a TikTok, it getting you okay, dude? You gotta start smoking those filtered cigarettes.
No, honestly, the smoke last week in New York, it really did fuck up my throat.
Oh man, so sorry to hear that, dude. You need to get a drink of water or something? You good?
No, I'm just like laying down. I think it's fucking me up.
Yeah. But yeah, made some hit TikToks, and then like I think I've had this theory that like if you get people who are big on TikTok to do a podcast together, and then you make TikToks out of their conversations, you will get people to want to tune in. And that wasn't true for The Bachelor, but the missing ingredient was it needs to be something that a lot of people care about and are talking about, you know, and are passionate about, which is in this case was the ultimatum. And so, yeah, we got thousands of people from TikTok.
That's cool.
It was amazing. It was amazing. So
what's the consumption, what's the distribution platform they're consuming on?
I don't know. You know, mostly just like podcast apps and so on. So
what feed posts the TikToks, or what account posts the TikToks?
I have a Decoding Reality separate account to do it.
How did that account perform, or how has that account like grown in audience with the TikToks?
The big issue is, David Cho, there were only 3 drops of the ultimatum. You know, it was it's not like there was like 15 episodes. It was like there's 3 episodes. So hard to really gauge it. But
got it.
But I know that, you know, I know what the listenership is, and it's, you know, in the thousands. And I know that a lot of that came from TikTok because there were very few other advertising venues, you know? So.
Anyway. I do know.
This
all sounds good.
That was a nice little thing. And then there's been a lot of really discouraging things that have happened.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
so I'll just give you like a rundown real quick.
Oh, an ongoing list of things that bummed you out. Okay.
Well, there was. First of all, like Succession ended, and for the first time since Decoding TV really got off the ground last year, there is no obvious show to recap, and we've already discussed this, so I don't want to go over it again.
I listened when I was in Italy. I was driving from Tuscany to Rome, and I listened to you and your wife's episode about Silo, a show that I will never watch and didn't really give a shit about. That shit sounds crazy.
Yeah,
like when you listen to that without any context, it sounds fucking batshit insane in a way that I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, yeah. Same.
But I listened. It was fun. It was a fun listen, honestly.
Yeah. And that's something I try to like. I've realized, you know, there's a part of each of these episodes where I try to recap what has happened in the DV episode. You know, like just straight up recap.
I don't even need to be honest, because it's like there's something about it where, and I think this is the thing that you and I maybe not disagree on, but like disagree on the priority of it.
Yeah.
And it's sorry, I'm like coughing and I'm just like muting.
No worries.
It's like. The idea that it's, and I know you're gonna fucking bring up Bald Move and all that stuff, but it's like it really is about the hang.
Yeah, yeah.
You know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean? Like it's like I like you and I like your wife, and I just like hearing you guys talk about stuff, and whatever it is. And so I'm kind of like, you know, the one thing I listened to the streaming show, The one thing that I think it's missing, sorry, I'm going to cough again. The one thing I think it's missing is, like, I want the thing that you cover in the newsletter, which is usually like a very broad subject that is like picked for peak virality, to kind of be discussed on whatever the weekly show is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to like have seen all of, like, Barry's a tricky one because Barry, I'm going to watch at some point, theoretically. I guess I haven't, yeah. So which is weird, but like, I'm theoretically going to finish season four of Barry, and like, I don't want to have to wait for that. You know what I mean? And I think what the Filmcast does so well is, like, you know, even if I haven't listened to the main review, there's like 45 minutes I can usually listen to if you guys are talking about, you know, whatever's happening in the news or whatever's happening wherever. And I think, like, I do think that content just it allows you to also loosen up from a format perspective a little bit, which I think is nice. You know, it's like, I don't need a recap of a show I'm never going to watch that I don't really care about. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty much just there for the hang.
Yeah,
I'm there because I'm like, I have to drive an hour or, you know, 2 hours from whatever, Tuscany to Pienza to Rome. And it's like, you know, I just need something to listen to. You know what I mean? And in a world where like so many of my podcasts are sports, which can get annoying, or news, which can be really depressing, especially now, it's like, it's kind of nice just to have a hang, you know? Yeah. And I just, for what it's worth, I think, like, I'd love for the, if you feel up for it, the Decoding universe to also kind of touch on some of those things that you're writing so well about. Because I love the things you write about, like, you know,
Decoding
Logan
Everything.
Roy.
I have this idea, like, I have this, you know, I have this, like, idea in my head of doing, like, a weekly live show where I would like talk about things that aren't just, it would just be like general variety, TV, movies, and basically the stuff I care about, and like do it live and do it with someone else who's like a really engaging presence, and broadcast it on YouTube and like make that into, you know, like turn culturally relevant into that. And that's the new, you know, Decoding Everything podcast. Redirect the podcast feed. So, you know, I have all these ideas, but like I just haven't had the will, the kind of partnership I feel I need to get it off the ground yet, but it's on my mind, you know, it's definitely on my mind. You know, another thing that happened I told you about was, and I just want to be clear before I get into this topic, because it's possible, you know, this recording may leave the bounds of Patreon. I just want to be clear.
I don't think so.
I think we're
going to get pretty dark. I don't think it's going to leave the bounds of Patreon.
I would prefer what happens on the Patreon save the Patreon, but I don't have an issue with it leaving the Patreon because of what I'm going to say next.
Oh, you're worried about snitches? You think any of our friends here would narc on us?
No snitches, but just I have spoken with the people I care about in this situation, and we are all good. And so there's no shade intended for anyone who may or may not touch what I'm about to talk about. Somebody at the Ringerverse subreddit made a very nasty post about me, and they're like, hey, you know, I love Joanna Robinson, but I decided to listen to some of her old episodes with David Chen, and David Chen fucking sucks. That was the kind of conclusion. And then like there's a bunch of like other Redditors like dogpiling me in the comments. Now, whatever.
And to be fair, there are also some Redditors who are supporting you.
Yeah, who are defending me, and I'm very grateful for that. But to be fair, like, hey, if you want to talk shit about me in your corner of the internet, like, go with God. Like, that's fine. You know, like everyone needs to let off some steam. But
I don't think that's true, actually. I think, like, fuck them, genuinely, like, fuck sure. them. That energy also is just, like, and, you know, it's funny because they, like, clarified it and they were kind of like, well, I actually meant this. It's like, well, you know what? Fuck you. You don't have to put that energy out in the world, period. You know what I mean? It's like, it's funny. I don't spend that much time on Reddit, but when I do, I always find that the anonymity and the sort of culture that exists there, where it's kind of a lot of, like, and this could be a generalization, but it's what my personal experience has been, where it's just a lot of shitposting people trying to like be even more excessive than they would be than on other platforms. And it, you know, it just fucking sucks. And when I was reading that, I was like, you motherfucker wouldn't say any of this shit if you like were saying it even close to the
within
the
earshot.
Not even earshot, but it's like if there was like digital adjacency. You know what I mean?
Like if you had to put your name on it, you're saying.
Yeah, and but to the person. You know what I mean? It's like if you had to at them, you are such a fucking coward that you wouldn't say any of that shit. And frankly, it's just like I think that's so, I don't know. It's like there are people on whom I think they open themselves up to a dog pile. And I think if you put yourself on the internet in any capacity, we talked about this with like Couch Guy a long time ago. It's like, yeah, it's like there are things that by doing this thing, it's going to happen. I think when the person who's doing the criticizing is that anonymous and that sort of like, I don't know. There's something about it that
yeah, it really rubs you the wrong way. I mean, I agree that certain,
but also because they walked it back so much. That's the other thing. It's like, you know what? If you fucking hate Dave Chen, hate Dave Chen, and don't be a fucking coward and a fucking just like don't be like, oh well, no actually when they see you when you enter the chat, don't be like, oh no oh bro, no, I actually love the film. It's like, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just cowardice in a way where it's like, do you have any integrity at all? Like, is there anything that means anything to you? Or are you just like, I don't know. I like hurt people. And I'm sure like the reasons why they do that shit, but it's like, fuck you. Genuinely. It's like, I don't know. I really
appreciate your anger on my behalf. And, you know, my wife shares your feelings on the matter, you know, and let me say a few things in response. First of all, as I was saying, I mean, if you want to talk shit about me, that's generally fine with me. The thing that kind of escalated the situation was someone DM'd me the post and then cut and paste the entire text of the post and then DM'd me that. Like
what medium?
So, on Twitter.
Oh, you gotta turn those replies off. You gotta get off that platform.
Well, so you know, some like on the rare occasion people professionally reach out to me on Twitter still.
Sure.
So I do check it every now and then, and that was like,
fuck,
oh,
that
like,
person too.
Like this. Oh yeah, don't worry. But it's like it's not just like, oh, this person, these people in their own corner of the internet decided to fucking shred me. It's like, oh, someone wanted to make sure I saw it. Like, someone wanted to make sure it hurt me.
What did you say to that person? Did you respond?
I didn't say anything. Didn't say shit. Ugh. I think like they're looking for a reaction, and I try my best to deny them that. Like, that's
can
what,
you send me the at? I kind of want to go at them.
Don't. It's basically a burner account, so it's not useful. They have like zero. They have like zero followers. If they
pathetic.
Trust me, David Cho. If there were like a public figure, trust me, like there would have been. There have been words about it, but they basically were like an anonymous burner account. Ugh. So that's what sucks is like, first of all, like, you know, just like the idea of a bunch of these people, I'm like fucking catching strays here, David Cho. Like I'm not going out, you know, talking about Game of Thrones, talking about Jonah Robinson at all right now. And then all of a sudden, like a bunch of randos put me on blast all for like no reason, no prompting at all. You know what I'm saying? Like, but then also somebody was like, oh, David Chen needs to see this fucking shit, you know, like, and so, it's the fact that someone DM'd it to me that's what really kind of got to me.
I was going to say something mean about someone else, but I just held back.
I
want you to be proud of me. You know what I mean?
I appreciate that.
I loaded it up in my mental chamber.
Yeah,
and then I put the gun down.
But you know,
you too can do that, Redditors.
Yes, okay. Exactly. And anyway, so I, you know,
shitheads.
Like, me and Joanna, I think, are on great terms. I bear her no zero ill will whatsoever.
Of course.
Yeah, we can't control what our communities say and do, you know, and that's very...
Unless it was her burner.
I don't think it was. I don't think so either.
So, it's just a fun mental game.
Not really. So anyway, so like that happened. And then also separately, David Cho, like...
What was separate from? Was there more to it?
No. Okay. But Succession ended, and so it's like kind of left me in a weird place. Now, I am very excited about some of the stuff that is coming out in the next few weeks. Like, there's some good quality podcasting coming out in the next few weeks on Decoding TV.
What shows?
But Black Mirror, Silo, and The Bear, and also David Cho, Withhold Judgment, but probably Secret Invasion. But I have a great guest for that who's going to be, or great co-host for that who's going to be awesome. So anyway, I'm excited, but it's like,
I'm sure you won't like it as much as you like Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Absolutely. But basically there's this like in between time period that's left me in this kind of limbo after Succession.
Yeah, totally.
And then also I almost broke my ankle in a very stupid accident.
I meant to ask you.
I'm not going to get into it, but it was a very stupid accident. I was at an IKEA and I almost broke my ankle.
You almost broke your ankle at an IKEA?
I know.
That's the worst place to almost break your ankle.
Absolutely. I will tell you, they were not very sympathetic, David Cho. and so I've
been
basically...
You got to control yourself around those meatballs, my guy.
100%. I've been essentially immobilized for the last 4 days. I've been not...
What have you been doing?
You've noticed probably my newsletter output has gone up. That's because I've been sitting on my couch writing and reading. That's all I've been doing. I haven't been able to leave the house for the last 4 days.
You described it on the Filmcast as you're living a Rear Window style experience, which I hope is not the case based on the subject matter of the movie Rear Window.
Yeah. So all these things have really put me into a funk is all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah,
so
listen, man,
I'm just in this funk right now.
June is a mulligan. Who cares? Summer.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to have to happen. So
use the arbitrary construct of months and time and whatever to just sort of be like, you know what, June, not for me. And then eat something yummy, you know?
You know, like I'm not a suspicious person generally, but I do sometimes believe sometimes when it rains, it pours. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, I don't think that's true.
I think it's like, hey, you know, one weird or bad thing happens. Sometimes you just get a bunch of them in a row, you know?
Can I give you a alternate hypothesis?
Please hit me.
I mean, I think it's like when it rains, it's like your ability to handle rain gets a lot worse because you're like, fuck, it's raining. You know what I mean? And so things that other times you probably be able to handle, I think you're like, oh God, I can't handle this right now. It's already raining. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe. I think it's like a little bit, you know, whatever. I mean, who cares? Like,
a lot psychological.
No, I mean, this is probably the most ongoing, you know, refrain of Dave on Dave, but I think it's like you control more than you think. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you obviously don't control the fucking shithead Redditors, and you definitely don't control the person who sent you that dumbass thing. And like, you know, be clear, I hate them. But you know, it's like, I think a lot of the stuff, I think you can still find joy in it. I also think it's like, it's going to get harder because like inevitably the more you do and the bigger you get, there will be more people like that. Hopefully their criticisms will be more valid as it goes on. It's like those criticisms were so just like when I was reading, I was like, oh, this is baseless. It almost felt very like fandom-y in a way. I'm like, what? And like, I just didn't understand it.
Well,
you know
that's something.
I mean?
That's something that I've witnessed, David Cho. Like, there is a desire from people listening to podcasts and anyone, you know, like people listening to true crime, people listening to whatever, to make it into like a sports game. To be like, oh, I like this co-host and I hate this co-host. And I've seen it happen with all my podcasts.
I don't think it's a good understanding of how sports work. But okay. Like, I don't think that's
no, but it's like there's this desire to want to make it.
I think it's a Stan
co-host
culture
one
thing.
Co-host I, one yeah yeah sure what I, you know Stan culture you know sports culture like I honestly think
again,
it's like
not sports
there's a desire to make it so it's like you're pitting people against each other so you can like root for one of them. And in reality, first of all, like when it comes to, you know, a podcast, it's like 95% of podcasts I made either in my bedroom or in my house, like in this room that's barely a recording studio. You know, it's like I'm just a random normal dude, right?
Do you consider
I'm not like a studio with like millions of dollars of funding. Like, I'm just a normal
dude.
Do you consider
any of what happened to you on Reddit my fault as a person who is largely responsible for the Ringer's existence? Or not largely, but like pretty like without me, I don't know if the Ringer would have existed. You know, because I was the founding publisher of Grantland and also helped the Ringer like figure out its monetization at the beginning and all that stuff. And obviously,
well, David,
like, Cho,
if you are the author of my pain, to quote Christoph Waltz in Spectre, if you are the author of all of my pain, you're also the author of a lot of my joys, David Cho.
Yeah, I think I'm the grandfather of the author of your pain. You know what I mean? And so on behalf of my family, let me just say, mea culpa. We didn't mean to. And you know, sorry about that one, buddy.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, man, time is weird and different. Anyway, so I will just say one last thing. You know, a couple of other like contextual things. One is that I'm very lucky. Like I over my years, I've experienced very little harassment, relatively little hate. I'm sure, like, if you're a woman
especially
on the internet,
especially considering how many sort of like strings you give them to pull, strings of your sweater you give them to pull.
Uh-huh. Well, it's okay. You're making up for lost time, David Joe. Yeah. I'm very lucky.
My long con has finally worked. Me putting the ringer in motion to finally set up time.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like Dante in Fast 10.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. So so there's that.
I don't think you need to qualify by saying, like, I get it. It's the right thing to say.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, I want people to have a clear sense of the fact that, like, this is not like I'm suffering abuse every single week and it's horrible.
And
it's
you like, know oh, your privilege. It's like, yeah, you're a man. You're not a woman of color. You know, it's like,
so I just want to be clear, like, that is... you know, I want to be clear on what the context is. And I also want to say, you know, every time I start getting this flack online.
Has this happened multiple times?
Yeah, occasionally. You know, my wife, Joy, said, hey, that means she kind of like perks up when I tell her I'm getting hate. And she's like,
nice,
hey, that means your stuff is reaching people who aren't in your
I did mean that. You know what I mean? It's like it's as you get bigger, it's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
More.
That's what that made me think of. Yeah. So it's like, it's not what, it's reaching people outside your normal circles and you should be like happy about that to some degree, you know?
It is even wild. Also, it's like, no matter how big you get, like you're still in your menchies. You know what I mean? It's like, I remember like years and years and years ago, I like made some joke in, I would say a top 20 most famous actors Instagram comments because I was like making a joke because one of my friends in the pictures I was like making fun of them and they were like, you need to delete that because she's gonna see that and it's gonna hurt her feelings. And I was like, oh my god, because it's just so funny. It's like there are thousands of comments, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, and to give a shit about what a stranger says seems so odd to us regular people, you know what I mean? But it's like, no, we're all just people. And like, we all kind of in some ways, like, not that you were looking for it by any means, but like, we all kind of like look for like that one thing where someone says something a little bit shitty and like, you know, it undermines the like the thousands of people that, or in her case, millions of people that like love her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an important thing for us to remember on the internet that we're all people, which I think you always do a good job of trying to be conscientious about, which is why I thought their criticisms were so baseless. To be honest.
Well, the other thing that I want to mention is there was another incident a while ago.
What was it?
I don't even remember what it was, but I did talk to my therapist about it. And the thing that she said to me, which I think is always important to keep in mind during these situations, is like, that's not about you. That's not about
you. Yeah. Hurt people. Yeah.
Well, it's just like
they're letting something else is going on. They have stuff
going on. There's a reason they feel the need to like take it out on you, but it's like, it's not about you. It's something they're going through. Like you are not the main character in their story. Like they're having a whole thing and then you're like the distant, you know, tertiary character. And therefore you should take it with that much level of like emotional investment as well, you know,
for better and for worse. I've been around a lot of small to medium to large famous people who have gotten hate on the internet en masse. And whenever it happens, I'm always like, you know, I do think it's the reason why a lot of these famous people documentaries had such a big rise was because like, it really does make it almost oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes it makes it almost impossible to hate a famous person because it's like,
when you get to know them.
It's like it honestly hit me for the first time when I was like younger and I watched the Ashley Simpson MTV reality show where I watched 10 episodes of her making an album. I was like, fuck, I like Ashley Simpson, I guess. And it's like the way I think it works is like, I always use this analogy when I'm talking to those people. I'm like, imagine a guy was walking down the street, right? And he's like walking really quickly and then he like hits you while he's passing And he's like, and then while he's passing, he's like, fuck you. And you're like, what? You just ran into me, bro. What? Why are you doing this?
Mm-hmm.
But like, and you're like, you know what? I hate that guy. That's like your immediate response, you know? But then if you like, and this is going completely against what I said, fuck you to those Redditors, but whatever, I'm a walking well, contradiction.
Yeah, I didn't say that, you know? So
yeah, well, I did though. But, yeah. but if that guy who you're mad at, if you like saw the 3 hours before in his life and the 3 hours after and all the things that happened that led him to that moment of saying, fuck you, you would normally cut. I think it usually contextualizes it in a way that you'd be like, you know what? Okay, it's worse for him right now, or it's worse for that person right now.
Beef, really good instance piece of art that demonstrates.
I haven't seen that, but
illustrates that concept. But yeah, I think that's one of the things that I.
You never know what someone's going through.
You never know what someone's going through, but also like. You know, I didn't read all the comments, or you know, I didn't really go. I posted a few things and then I left because I didn't want to look at it for my mental health. Like I just
for sure, good call.
But
there were a lot of people defending you. I read every single one. I'm not even joking.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people defending you.
But one of the things that occurred to me when reading the negative comments about me was like, these people don't understand what it was. Like what we were going through. I think you have in your mind a version of, oh, this is David Chen, a guy who, you know, worked with General Robinson, didn't deserve to be in the position he was in, got resources he shouldn't have gotten, you know, and like that's I think the core of most critiques of online personalities or actors or whoever is like that person doesn't deserve to be there, and I do. Like that's kind of. I believe that's the core of 99% of critiques of people. And I think a lot of people had that in mind. They're like, oh, this, you know, David Chen was part of this extremely well-financed, well-established outfit. And it's like, no, dude, like Joanna Robinson and I, we're both working full-time jobs. We both were making multiple other podcasts. We are barely like eking this out on top of all the other stuff we had to do. And it's like, yeah, of course, like sometimes it might not be, I might not be like at my best. And I think they just have a whole different story of what it was.
Here's hoping they don't hear the After Dark where they hear about your dinner in Monaco.
That's a once in a lifetime thing, which I tried to make very clear, David Cho.
Oh, it sounded like every other.
I
think the other thing is, and I think you should take this as a good thing is a lot of people in the defenses were sort of like, because it, I mean, here's the thing about that Reddit thread. It was just wrong. It was like, there are things they could criticize you on, but they weren't criticizing the right things.
Yeah, sure.
And they were kind of like painting you as this person. And a lot of people were just really defending your character, saying like how high character a human being you were. And for what it's worth, I think that's a good sign. I think it's a good sign that there are that many people that like see you and understand you and understand something that I know and honestly, what I like and respect about you so much is how much you try to make sure you are doing, you at least have a moral ethos. You know what I mean? And I think, I think that came through enough to where other people are advocating that and sort of speaking on your behalf about that. And so I know it was obviously very, not joking. I know it was probably really traumatic and it probably puts you into a weird headspace, but for what it's worth, I think it did, in a really roundabout way, validate the sort of like work you've done to make yourself a person who has high character on the internet. And so again, as the grandfather of that situation, I guess you're welcome, you know, for...
All right, fair enough, David Cho. Fair enough. All right. So, well, those are some things. So
the
gift
of David Cho keeps giving.
It so does. Well, anyway, things have been rough lately.
Honestly, bro, I'm telling you, just spend the rest of June just like kind of chilling and eating some yummy stuff.
You know? I'd love
Secret Invasion comes out next week.
I'd love to, David Cho, but my numbers are drop. My subscriber numbers are dropping, man. So I gotta get some more of that content out there. I will say one last thing, and then we can talk about The Flash real quick.
Oh, by the way, listen, we're gonna talk about The Flash.
Yeah, in a moment. I should
tease that at the top.
Yeah. But one of the things that I really feel like I'm like I've like hit a groove, David Cho, with the
video, nice.
with the video production, because basically I got accepted to the TikTok creator beta. Okay.
Yeah, I know where this is going. Yeah, tell us more.
Well, it's just basically like TikTok is starting to pay reasonable money for video views now, and I basically have let my YouTube page, which was decent. I have let it languish for like many months, and I got obsessed with making these short form videos because they're so much easier to make, and you get that dopamine hit from reaching a million people.
Yeah, that's the reason I was being dismissive towards that is because all it does is, and this is literally by design, is it creates another reason for you to invest more time and energy in what other people think about you in a way that I don't like. It's put a very low premium conversion rate on Cho Bucks, a concept that we talked about early in the Dave on Dave series.
Cho Bucks, which are basically like imaginary internet points. Cho Bucks in this context are like TikTok likes or views, basically. They're like they're not actually usable for any
also,
real life.
They might not even be true. You know what I mean? It's like those might be fucking gojoed the fuck up, and it like you know what I mean? It's like
yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It would not be weird for that to be the case. Okay, but yeah, so now TikTok is giving you 10 cents for every 1,000 Cho Bucks you have.
Point being, now I feel like I can spend 30 to 45 minutes a day or every other day making a video, be able to post it across multiple platforms: Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, and like. And I'm enjoying it. It's fun. It's fun. I like doing it. And it's like, hey, I have 3 shots of winning the lottery. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, it's like, I'm glad to hear you happy about something. I just wish it wasn't this, you know what I mean?
Fair enough. But anyway, yeah. So basically I'm saying I've really out of practice with the videos, but I'm slowly spinning it up. I know like, getting your name in my videos is like one of the rewards on the Patreon, and like I've just not made any videos recently, but like I'm starting that back up again, and I'm really excited, and hopefully I can keep that momentum going this
is
summer.
Is that a Patreon bonus?
It's a Patreon bonus, yeah. So
oh, nice.
Hopefully there's a lot of like I can get some more momentum going for that this summer.
Could we make a Dave on Dave Patreon goal?
What is that, Dave Chow?
I don't know. Like let's just make one. Let's just see if we can get
live Dave on Dave. Live Dave on
no,
Dave.
No, live Dave on Dave isn't good
if
enough.
If we get 10,000 subscribers.
10,000?
Live Dave
can
on
we,
Dave.
Can we set the goals a little more realistic, please?
All right, David Joe, let's talk about The Flash.
Okay. You want to talk about I just got out of
The Flash. You just got out of it, so we just spent a few minutes reacting to it, but...
So I saw your... And I'm very Jeff Cannata in this way, where I go into a movie... knowing literally as little as possible. So I barely knew Michael Keaton was in the movie. I guess we're going to spoil The Flash. So watch The Flash and then, you know, come back here.
He's been in a lot of the marketing. He's in the Super Bowl trailer. So like,
yeah, that's crazy to me. I think like, I thought they really fucked up the marketing of The Flash.
Like, I don't think so, because they had to go with Michael Keaton because they're not going to go with Ezra Miller. Do you know?
Yeah, I get that. It's just kind of like, I don't know. It felt like if you didn't know that was coming, it feels like it would have hit so hard.
Oh, it would have been fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's like I remember when Darth Maul in Phantom Menace opened up the dual lightsaber, and I remember my friend from high school being like, man, imagine if they hadn't put that in the trailer. Like, you know, they didn't have to. Everyone's going to go see Star Wars anyway. People would have fucking lost their mind if in the theater was the first time they saw Darth Maul light up dual lightsabers.
Like, anyway. I just wish I could have been, clean for that, you know?
Yeah, sure. So.
But I liked it.
Fair enough. I do want to start by saying Ezra Miller has allegedly been on a reign of terror around the world, physically and psychologically abusing people. And if you decide for yourself, you do not want to see The Flash because you do not want to financially benefit Ezra Miller in any way, I 100% understand and support your decision in that regard.
I have a friend who worked with him who said
I know there's going to be some patrons who will refuse to see the movie, and all the power to them.
Yeah,
so I just want to start with that.
But I have some friends who worked with him who said he was a absolute fucking terror.
Mm-hmm.
Like genuinely just horrible. But that being said, also very good in this movie. It's a really hard thing to reconcile. He is like, he was good in this, and he's not going to come back. There's no like
I don't
as
think
an
so.
Actor.
You know,
he's too far gone.
Andy Muschietti has said, like, oh, if there's a Fly sequel, he's totally in. And
he
I don't
said
believe,
that?
Yes, I don't believe that.
Oh, no. Bro, you got to get better at being famous to Andy Muschietti, who might be directing the next Batman movie. It's like, you can't say that. Like, he's done. Like, I don't think, like, there are too many people I know, like, executives who have said, like, oh, no, he's fucked. Now, granted, we'll see what The Flash's first week is, and I'm sure that'll inform things. How did you feel about it as a person who, you know, again, we're talking about your sort of, like, you know, very taut moral compass. Like, what was your sort of...
Well, I want to start by saying there's a lot of people who are like, I will not watch the movie. I think that's completely fine.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of people who are attacking people for talking about the movie, which I don't agree with as much. I am of the opinion that a movie represents the work of thousands of people. And if one of them is a criminal or a terrible person, like, I don't know that that person should be able to, like, that person's actions should dictate whether or not we even consume the art. People are welcome to have their feeling, like, complicated feelings on that person, you know, and their role in the film. But I don't know. It's tough for me to then go to, oh, it should not even be evaluated. Like, I don't know if I...
Content and sort of modern purity tests are generally almost impossible in a world where human beings all fucking suck. Present company included.
Thanks, David Cho.
No, I mean, not you.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that in terms of how I feel about him, let me just say that the movie The Flash begins with Ezra Miller's character, Barry Allen, the Flash, like, about to go and, like, do some superhero stuff, right? Like, and there's, like, a fun action scene at the beginning that has that character. And there's a scene where, like, this teenage girl, like, runs up to him and starts screaming and is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm seeing you. It's amazing. And, like, that felt really uncomfortable.
There's one part though that, like, I forget what it is. I'm gonna butcher the story, but, like, he says, like, oh, well, that was a mistake. And I was like, whoa, that's weird. You know what I mean? Where, like, he does something wrong and then he's kind of like, I shouldn't have done that. And it felt very meta in a way where it's like, I don't know. And it's like, I wonder what has TikTok been saying about him and The Flash in general?
Well, it's hard to say, David Cho, because I think there's a lot on there. There's a lot of, like, DC fanboys out there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And so it's, like, hard to, like, you know, people who still wish that Zack Snyder would return and, like, Jesus, save the DC universe from its current problems. You know, so,
yeah,
like,
they want Zack Snyder to rise.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think he is pretty good. I'm sorry. Ezra Miller uses they, them pronouns. I agree with you that they are pretty good in the movie. They have a very tricky dual role where they play themselves and a younger version of themselves. And so in terms of their performance, I think it's pretty solid. The movie is pretty overstuffed, has a ton of fan service, has a ton of Easter eggs.
I think it was properly stuffed. Like, I really do. It's like, we, and you know, it's like, who knows what'll be the, what was the other asteroid movie that came out when Armageddon came out?
Deep Impact.
Yeah. Who knows what'll end up being the Deep Impact or what'll be the Armageddon when the multiverses, like, stuff all stops. But it's like, I think honestly, it's closer to an Armageddon than a Deep Impact. Honestly.
Didn't it kind of do the
multiverse stuff better than any Marvel movie's done it so far?
It did it decently, and I'll just say, like, I, David Chen, like, love time travel stuff. Like, that's one of my favorite genres of film. Multiverse stuff I love. The idea of...
You love multiverse stuff, even now?
Yes. Yeah. Multiverse stuff, the idea of, like, being stuck in a time loop, being trapped by your past, like, it's all extremely
trapped by your past.
It's all extremely fascinating to me. Like, Time Crimes is one of my favorite movies. You know, like,
yeah,
I
sure.
So it's just this movie, The Flash, is, like, really appeals to kind of my core sensibilities. But also, yeah, it is gross to see Ezra Miller on screen because there are people who have done way less than Ezra Miller who have been punished way more. And I think it lays bare Hollywood's unfortunate hypocrisies.
I don't think it's Hollywood. I think it's human nature. I think it's like
I think it's Hollywood specifically.
I don't know, man. It's like
because I think if Ezra Miller was not headlining a $100 or $200 million film, they would have been discarded a long time ago. And I don't think that dynamic really exists in the same way in other industries. So.
I think it's more public because they're famous. I think like the reality is like we as people, I mean, the current process we have for sort of social justice in a more literal sense, not the sort of like whatever sense, like I think is just, it's really inconsistent and it's really just kind of like, you know, and I don't think we should go down the path, but it's like Brad Pitt. Who knows what we should even think about it? And he lives very, and you know, in a without any consequence, right? And there are other people who do, you know, who have less allegations against them, and you know, whatever. It's just like I think the current system we live in is one that is not by any means fair or just or anything. I think it's just extremely random in a way that, like, I don't know if that'll ever stop, but I just think.
Like, yeah, okay, that's another way of looking at it, David Cho, which I'm also not opposed to, which is like it lays bare the arbitrariness of how society treats people who have been terrible people, you know, like,
yeah.
Which is extremely, extremely arbitrary.
Like the Johnny, I don't know, like I think it's more pronounced in with famous people with Hollywood because we end up finding out so much about it because people care about famous people. But like, I don't know, I think about like CEOs that I know or different leadership people that I like, people at big companies, I'm like, oh no, they're all equally fucked. It's just like we just don't hear about it as much in as grotesque detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that then that's why I'm kind of saying like I do think it's everyone, not not in like a good way, but in like a, you know, whatever way. But honestly, yeah, I enjoyed The Flash.
I think it's an enjoyable film. You know, it's an enjoyable film.
It made me excited for the James Gunniverse. You know what I mean? Like, like it, you could feel him in the movie, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though he wasn't directly involved.
He wasn't even involved in the making of it, yeah.
Like, but it's like, you could feel tonally how this fit with what he would do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it's also because the Marvel movies have sucked so much.
It's certainly one of the most like coherent DC movies. It's also like generally pretty lighthearted, I think, right?
Tone is right. It does a good job with the tone. I just like, it's just wild to me. It's like, I think time travel can often work because time travel mechanics are pretty straightforward. But multiverse mechanics are very, very like convoluted and so much more open-ended. It's like, There isn't a multiverse movie that I think functions as well as Back to the Future does as establishing like very clear time travel rules that then get adopted everywhere else. You know what I mean? It's like there's at one point one character explains a multiverse to another character. And I'm kind of like, this kind of doesn't make sense. Like the spaghetti scene. You know what
fine.
I mean?
It's fine.
It's
an excuse for them to play around with shit.
Yeah. But like when he's using spaghetti to explain it, I'm like, huh? Excuse me? Like, how does that work?
But, it's all made up anyway, David Cho, you know? So
I mean, it kind of, yeah. But I believe in multiverses as a premise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? There's a multiverse where we didn't start this podcast tonight, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you would have gotten a little more sleep, so.
I doubt that, actually.
David Cho, grateful for your time. The Flash, we had a decent time with it. It had some really good stuff. But
you
yeah.
gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. I think I'd probably give it 3.5 as well. That's better than a decent time. It's a good sit, honestly.
It's a good sit. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did your wife see it?
No.
Oh. Press screening?
Yeah, I went to a press screening. So, yeah.
Nice. Anyway. Must be nice to see how the other half lives.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I use my, I'd use $30 of AMC A-list money to see it.
Well, I'm sorry that it took a bite out of 0.00001% of your net worth, David Cho.
Right. Let's hang this up. Now. How old are you again, Dave?
Have a good night, everyone.
I can't fight fire with fire.
Have a good night, everyone.